This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Power Talk, the Culture Corner.
It is the Culture Corner on this Wednesday edition of Power Talk here at Power 98.7. And we are looking at a culture from the land of the rising sun, Japan. The country that first receives the rays of the sunshine, a country steeped, rich in history, and a political system based on the ancient and the modern. And I have to tell you, of all my travels across the world, the one country where I have never experienced respect, and not for me as a person, just observed respect on the level at which I saw in Japan. The Japanese are a highly, highly, highly respectful people. It's in the culture. The thank yous, the pleases, the bowing in reverence and honor of just even a customer buying something in a shop. Those are the Japanese. But we are talking about the culture of Japan, its customs and its norms, because I don't know if you've observed, but many South Africans really love sushi. There is a whole sushi revolution that's taken over South Africa. And this Japanese dish is a staple at so many parties, at luxury events. And I think it's a symbol of a kind of an urban cosmopolitan lifestyle. And many have sort of ditched the pap-and-vleis for sashimi and California rolls, to the point where there's even an advertisement on South African television where these gogos, these women in their 70s, are busy ordering a meal online. And there's one gogo who distinctly, very clearly wants sushi. So is sushi embedded in local cuisine and culture? And so I thought to myself, you know, we may love sushi, but do we know enough about sushi, the Japanese, their culture, and even indirectly how it's starting to have a small impact on our own modern cosmopolitan urban cultures? And that's why we're having this conversation with Emma Reuters, who's the director of the Japanese Language Club of South Africa. Emma, good morning.
Hi there. I'm so glad to be on the show today.
Thank you for coming through. So first and foremost, you're a South African, I'm told, but you know a lot about Japanese culture. How so?
Yeah, so I've been interested in Japan for quite a long time. Yeah. And that eventually culminated in me moving to Japan. I lived in the most northern part of Japan, a prefecture called Hokkaido.
Yes.
And it's very interesting because Japan's a pretty big country in terms of length.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the most northern part in winter. It's negative 20 degrees. The snow comes up to your knee. And in the most southern part of Japan, Okinawa, it's tropical. And in December, in the wintertime, it's 20 degrees. So it's a massive country, quite a lot of different sort of biomes, and of course the culture is very similar. It's a really rich culture. So I was living there for about a year, and I've been learning Japanese for about 6 or 7 years now. I started the Japanese Language Club in 2020.
Right.
We've got quite a few members. We've been teaching students in South Africa how to learn Japanese, how to speak Japanese. We work alongside some native speakers who live in South Africa. And finally, this year, very recently, I went to the University of Oxford and I completed a degree in Japanese studies, interestingly looking at how Japanese investment is actually increasing into the continent of Africa broadly.
Mm.
And in that whole region, South Africa is still the number one recipient of Japanese investment. We capture about 70%. So, yeah, a really amazing country and still the third biggest economy in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Still the third biggest economy in the world. Mm-hmm. And we see those investments. The taxi industry, they all drive Toyotas, right?
Exactly.
You know?
And that's the largest car company in the world. Yeah.
Okay. So indirectly, there are a lot of these traces of Japanese influence in our world. Mm-hmm. But I'm particularly interested in, as I said, the sushi revolution. But before we go there, I mentioned that when I've traveled to Japan, I was really intrigued at how respect is mm-hmm. lauded in Japan. There's mm-hmm. something about the culture that says you have to respect people. So, and it's similar to what we do in South Africa, where when you speak to someone as a mark of respect, you say, mm-hmm. "Os Emma, me mm-hmm. Emma, Dades Mang Mang." It's respect. It doesn't mean they are older than you, or even that they are old enough to be your parents. But it's just acknowledging that it's an honorific that just kind of says to someone, "I see you, and I defer to you." And that's why we do mm-hmm. it. And the Japanese do the same, because they would call you mm-hmm. Emma-san or Lerato-san or exactly. Owen-san, which is a Mr., Madam. Just explain to us why the culture insists on some of these things.
Certainly. So you're completely right. Japan has a very deep respectful culture, and it has a lot to do with seeing people as a society, not as necessarily always, you know, as a sort of Western individualistic approach to community. And you're right, you'd refer to anyone that you meet with son, and you will always refer to them by their surname. So for me, I would be like Reita's son, rather than, you know, but people would also call you Emma-san. There's quite a lot of respect also for teachers, for doctors. You'd refer to them as sensei. And then there's quite a strong understanding of, you know, superior, and I mean, that's not the correct term per se, but a respect for seniors and hierarchy. A respect for juniors, the hierarchy, correct. So maybe you'd refer to your senior as senpai at school, and your juniors as kun, you know. So if I was your junior, you'd call me Emma Kun, or if I'm your senior, you'd call me Emma Senpai. And if it's a customer at a shop or someone coming to your hotel or someone who's a guest, you'd refer to them as sama. So it's very important to understand all of those dynamics in Japanese culture and to be able to navigate, because you can make quite a lot of mistakes, you know, if you use the wrong term or you use the wrong words, you know, to refer to someone. It's very important to understand that respectful culture there.
And there's another thing that they do in Japan when they express gratitude. They bow, and not nod your head, as in bow a little bit. And what I'm told is the more grateful, the lower they bow. So again, I was in Tokyo. I just had a pedicure and I paid for it. That's all I did. And the masseuse, she bowed to say thank you. And I was a little bit embarrassed, but I saw them doing this with every customer. It's what they do. So I guess when somebody's extremely grateful for something you've done, the lower they bow.
Yeah, the Japanese bow has, cultural significance. You'd bow to greet people. You'd bow when you meet someone for the first time. You even might do a small bow when talking on the phone. You might see Japanese people speaking on the phone, and they'll be saying, you know, they'll be bowing very frequently, even though the other person can't see them. And so there's even different names for different types of bows, but you're completely correct that when you bow deeply, it's the most sincere form of respect, and a more light bow that you'd see when someone's leaving a room, for example, is, you know, just a more everyday bow. But your bowing is very important in Japanese society.
It's not just in Japanese society. When you travel to West Africa, people curtsy and bow. Yes, they do. So in Nigeria, when you greet somebody who's older than you, your boss, the chairman of a company, you bow. And if you've been given a promotion and you meet the person who lobbied for your promotion, the lower you bow. So these are, I don't know if they're importations from Japan, but these are some of the things that have resonance with how Africans are supposed to be behaving as well.
I mean, I like that you've raised that, because I do think that there's quite a lot of commonality between Japan and some of the cultures you'll see in different African countries. I think that understanding of also respect for your elders, respect for your community. I mean, even the idea of Ubuntu, I saw that quite strongly in Japan, just how people take care of each other. Maybe I can give you an example.
Please.
From grade one in Japan, I was working at different schools, primary schools and so on. The children are taught to serve food to each other at lunchtime. Wow. So the food gets brought in from farms in the surrounding area. And then they bring in these big vats, big pots. They carry the pots up to the classrooms. And then every day of the week, a different group of students will be serving the food. And they all put on their little aprons and their head scarves, and they have to serve each of their classmates the rice and whatever else may be served that day. And it really teaches them that humbleness and that respect to their community. And I was so impressed. I never imagined, grade ones would be doing this. It was beautiful to see.
Okay, so let's talk about what brought us here. The sushi revolution in South Africa. What do you make of it? Is it fair for me to call it a revolution? And it's not new, huh? It's been going on for more than 10 years, but now I just see sushi everywhere.
Sushi is definitely probably one of Japan's most famous exports, but I will maybe even disappoint you to say that most of the sushi we eat in South Africa is kind of Americanized. So
California
traditionally,
rolls right there.
exactly. And even eating avocado in sushi, that's not traditionally in sushi. That was something that was invented by, as far as I understand, a Japanese American chef who was looking for new kind of ingredients. And so traditional Japanese sushi is very much fish based, but you might see other unusual, innovations. I've even tried blueberry sushi before. But there's more than just sushi, if I may add. There's sashimi, which is sort of very fresh
Fish,
fish. Also raw, no rice. You have obviously ramen, which is the noodles. Traditional Japanese ramen is some of the most amazing food you will ever taste. Very rich, sometimes cooked for over 24 hours. The broth is so carefully prepared. You get different types of. Oh, I think quite an interesting fact that many South Africans might be curious about is there's over 200 different flavors of Kit Kat in Japan.
The
You know the
chocolate.
chocolate? Yes, there's 200 flavors in Japan.
Made of
So you'll
what?
get, for example, wasabi flavor or soy sauce flavor. You can get. You can even get potato flavor. I'm not joking, like the purple potato flavor, green tea flavor, all kinds of things. And then also the more flavors we might be familiar with, like strawberry or orange or condensed milk flavor, I think I've seen before. Japan loves kind of innovation and anything that's new and seasonal. They love seasonal kind of kind of takes on different things.
So just give us a little bit of a brief history of sushi and the techniques, because my understanding is that it was originally introduced, if that's the word, as a way of preserving fish in ancient Japan. And so when we're seeing people eating sushi in Joburg, which has no beach, no big lakes, no sea, no river, I'm wondering, where are you sourcing your ingredients, let alone the seaweed?
So yeah, I think you're completely correct. Sushi in Japan, I mean, Japan's very coastal. As I mentioned, it's a very narrow country and but with a massive coastline. So in general, when people make sushi there, it's very fresh. And I imagine that, people eating sushi in Joburg, it might be a little bit frozen. And then but in Japan it's a craft, there are people who it becomes like sort of a family thing, you get handed down, it takes a long time to train to become a sushi chef. And there's a lot of care taken into the preparation of the food, and very stringent hygiene practices. So it's very safe to eat it. And I must say, sushi, particularly in the Hokkaido region where I used to live, is considered to be some of the best fish that you'll taste. I mean, it's just so fresh.
Okay. Another thing the Japanese do is they love to kind of decorate, create pretty things out of nature. there's an art for that. I can't think of it right now. It starts with a T. I can't think of it right now. But they do that a lot. And the Chinese do too. The Asians do it too. But there's something, there's some meaning in bringing together the beauty of nature into the decor of the house, into creating order. Just explain to us how that works and what that is.
Certainly. So, you know, Japan has about two major religions, and I mentioned this because it plays an important factor into how Japanese people perceive nature and perceive the world. So the first one is Shintoism.
Right.
So Shintoism is a very, very old religion. It's sort of an animist religion. There's a belief that almost everything has a soul. So from rocks to rivers, trees.
Right.
So there's quite a lot of respect for nature. And you'll find that Japan is actually one of the most forested countries in the world. About 70% of the country is covered in forests, which I think shows that sort of respect to nature. And you'll find that a lot of the temples and so on are often in very natural places and kind of preserve the respect for nature. And so because in Shintoism, you know, you see kind of small gods in all of the, you know, in the river and so on, you will then have respect for them and decorate, for example, trees with, you know, just to show that respect towards, you know, these small gods as like kami. Gods are called kami in Japan, right? And the other religion, the other major religion is Buddhism. And that came through, I think, in about the 10th, 11th century from China. But as we know, Buddhism's originally from India. But that has also informs quite a lot of how Japanese people see the world and so on. And so modern day Japan is kind of a hybrid of this kind of Shinto Buddhism. Even though most Japanese people would probably say they're not very religious, the kind of culture of Shinto and Buddhism has become very much a part of society, even if people are not necessarily very religious in the way we understand it as Christians or in South Africa or Muslims or and so on.
And and going back to how, you know, the touches of Japan in our daily lives are the things perhaps, you know, we haven't internalized. We see it, but we haven't programmed it, you know. And I'm thinking of video games. And I'm thinking of cartoons as well. And a lot of that sort of stuff in pop culture that our children are exposed to, that even we were exposed to, anime, you know, online in this digital world. Could you just tell us about those soft touches of cultural influences all around us?
Certainly. So most people may know that the Sony PlayStation is a Japanese, you know, Sony, Japanese company. And Nintendo, you may know, Pokemon, all of those companies are Japanese. And you might not realize it, but a lot of the ideas in those games and shows are very deeply sort of culturally Japanese. So Pokemon, for example, takes quite a lot from the Japanese idea of yokai, which are kind of like monsters or folklore.
Right.
And quite a few Pokemon are directly derived from different mythological concepts in Japanese culture. So I'm not sure how familiar everyone is on the line with Pokemon, but you might know Ninetales. It's a sort of a fox Pokemon with nine tails. And that comes from a Japanese legend of the Kyuubi. And so it's very interesting how much the culture, we consume it every day, you know, Dragon Ball Z, you know, I know lots of South African children on SABC 2 will watch, you know, Naruto or, you know, Dragon Ball Z or Yu-Gi-Oh! And that's all Japanese. Those are all Japanese cartoons.
My goodness.
And as you mentioned, the gaming industry is one of the biggest in the world. And we all play the, you know, these different games. So it's very much a part of modern life, I think, Japanese culture.
And just clarify, Kung Fu, is that Japanese or is that Chinese and just Asian in general?
So that's quite interesting. Kung Fu is Chinese, but karate or karate is Japanese.
And we use the words interchangeably, which is wrong, because we just think everybody going to karate is doing Kung Fu or vice versa.
Exactly. But it's not the same. There's different traditions, but I will say that karate, which is the Japanese version, I suppose, of Kung Fu, it's from southern Japan, the Okinawa area, which traditionally was not actually a part of sort of the mainland Japan. So
Right.
people see Japan as very homogenous, but actually there's quite a lot of different histories and even different kingdoms that had existed at some point. So in Okinawa, they're the Ryukyu people, and they kind of came up with the idea of karate, which is why if you've watched The Karate Kid, you'll know that Mr. Miyagi comes from Okinawa. And he even speaks a slightly different language to mainland Japanese. They speak different Okinawan dialects. There's about six of them.
Wow.
It's quite interesting that, yeah, Japan's not as homogenous, I think, as people
Yeah.
realize as well. Yeah.
Okay, I've been asked to ask you one question very briefly, and it's about the black Japanese called Ainu. Do you know anything about Ainu?
I'm so glad you asked that. So the Ainu are actually from the region where I used to live in Japan, Hokkaido. And they were kind of an Aboriginal group who spoke a different language to mainland Japanese people, and they worshipped bears. They have very different ideas of kind of dress, and the language, as I mentioned, was different. So unfortunately, in I think the very early 1900s, mainland Japanese people kind of colonized Hokkaido, which is the northern island. And unfortunately, the Ainu people's culture became it's quite under threat even today. There's only a handful of speakers who still speak Ainu. They've pretty much become
Right.
part of, mainstream Japanese culture now. They
Right.
speak Japanese, but many of their traditions are still preserved in museums and so on
Wow.
in Hokkaido. But
Okay.
this is an example of Japan not being the homogeneous culture that
Right.
people understand it to be. There are different peoples in on the Japanese islands.
And thanks to Shocks for raising that one. And then Owen, our engineer, says I should ask you that we use chopsticks to eat sushi, but in Japan it's considered finger food. You've got to use your fingers.
Yeah, this is quite a fun one. So you can use chopsticks, of course, but yeah, the word nigiri, which you've heard with sushi, right? It literally means to grasp or to grab. And so sushi, yes, you should actually eat it with your fingers. There's a particular way you're supposed to hold, grab the sushi with your fingers as well. But yeah, it's pretty much
Wow.
interchangeable. People don't mind if you eat it with chopsticks as
Right.
well.
And
Yeah.
Emma, where can people find your Japanese language club if they're interested?
Yeah, so I can tell you can go to www.jlcsa.co.za, and you can join us for events or language classes we do as well. And I'd also like to maybe mention, if you'd like to try different kinds of Japanese food that's not sushi, you should also have a look at our partner, which is called Oji Shop. So Oji, like OJI Shop. And they sell at least 10 different types of Kit Kat, so you can try out the green tea or the soy sauce flavor if you
Yeah.
like. And
Wow.
yeah, we're trying to bring and bridge Japanese and South African culture. That's our real mission, because
Right.
I think that even in Japan, they're becoming more and more interested in South Africa and Africa as a whole.
Yeah.
And I really want to, bring that all together.
Oh, this has been such a fantastic conversation. To that point, landless black vendor man says, Lerato, bowing is also a norm in the vendor tradition, especially when greeting or receiving a gift. But men are expected to kneel on one knee on the floor as a sign of repeated appreciation. So there's so many synergies, so much resonance. There's so much that we are as Africans that the Japanese would recognize and that we would recognize. And thank you so much, Emma Reuters, or shall I say Reuters-san. Thank you so much for coming through. Arigato.
Arigato gozaimashita.
That's been the
Thank you.
Wednesday edition of Power Talk.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.